This is Fuel.
Fuel for thought.
Fuel injected.
Fuel for your business.
Jet fuel.
One of the things is why are you looking to win new business? And that sounds really basic, but that could be, you know, for a lot of people, it's just increase our income. Or it's actually, you know, often it's we need another pillar client. We've got one or two pillar clients. We feel vulnerable. Something's changed in those clients' world. We need another pillar client.
Welcome to Fuel, the new business podcast sponsored by The Advertist, the new business development platform for agencies working in the creative and marketing communications area. And I'm your host, a Smith called Keith. So how do you rate your ability to win business? 1 out of 10? 1 in 5? 1 in 3 perhaps? Well, no matter how good you are, you can always be better if you use The Advertist. The Advertist is the only new business development platform designed specifically for today's creative communications agencies because it was designed by a team of people who do the very same job you do. It's the UK's leading database of marketing, PR, digital marketing, C-suite, HR and procurement contacts, all GDPR compliant and maintained by a team of dedicated researchers. But the database is just one of the great things about The Advertist. A subscription buys you daily updates of new business news, headlines, insight, research, people moves, and now the UK's only source of UK-centric tenders. Not to mention all the off-the-peg lists, a useful blog, and this, the new business podcast. The Advertist is dedicated to helping you do the new business job more effectively. So give the team a call on 0203 356 3717 today or email hello@theadvertist.com to book a free trial and immediately increase your odds of winning new business. Now, before we get into this week's show, Jeremy Davis wants to clear the atmosphere over lengthy pitch processes.
Jeremy Davis!
It was reported this week that E.ON has reappointed their creative agency on a 2-year contract after a 9-month pitch process. Which sounds a bit like one of those mornings when you spent ages looking for your wardrobe only to eventually put on the same clothes you wore yesterday. Or, to use a previous analogy, Dominic Raab walking into a pret-a-manger and standing in front of the sandwich fridge for way more than the 30 seconds that the unspoken law of such places dictates, considering whether to try the soup or even one of those hot sandwich thingies that always look as though they've just come out of the microwave, while everyone around or behind him gets increasingly annoyed because he's blocking their access to the big BLTs, before selecting the chicken Caesar baguette, just like every other day. Now, I'm not decrying the quality of the Engine Group's work, which is clearly excellent and effective, notably their Let's Clean the Air execution, showcased currently on the campaign website. It's just that to spend 9 months in pursuit of a contract not much more than double that length of time seems, well, a tad unfair, particularly on the losers. How much must they have invested in that process? At least, times being what they are, they won't have had to shell out for multiple trips for meetings and presentations at the client's offices. So I guess every cloud has a silver lining. And of course, E.ON might point out that that's because it contains lower levels of air pollution. Hey, the next evolution of the Clean Air campaign. You're welcome. 9 months well spent. I'm joking, of course. I'd never presume to be able to do the creative's job. No delusions of grandeur here. Although, on that subject, Engine's MD responded that I can't think of a more important or unique challenge for an agency than to help save the planet. Which begs the question of how much of those 9 months he'd been up. Because as delusions of grandeur go, it's up there with David Icke making the intellectual leap from saving penalties for Coventry to saving souls for Jesus. The symbolism of such a process taking 9 months, of course, will not be lost on any parent. Indeed, I have heard the process of coming up with a great creative idea compared to giving birth, although only, it must be said, by men. To extend that particularly inaccurate analogy, one might compare a tender or other similar exercise involving procurement to giving birth by caesarean section, in that there are many more people involved, makes for a pretty grisly spectacle, it takes longer to recover from, and leaves you permanently scarred.
Now, When we first started this podcast, we couldn't really call it a new business podcast of significance until we'd spoken about, or to, the Future Factory. Since they burst on the scene in 2011, the team at TFF have significantly helped put the business of new business on every agency's map. And at the start of the lockdown, TFF began putting on their top hats, doing up their shirt fronts and stepping on the gas to prove that when the going gets tough, the tough get going. Now, we're long overdue for a catch-up to see if the theory of powering through a downturn is still paying off. So here's me chatting with Alex Sabeel of The Future Factory. Now, for the last month, we've been indulging ourselves with a rich diet of social media and content marketing. But it's the new year, and we've been promising ourselves that we'd get back on the treadmill and indulge in a healthy intake of new business goodness. Now, we've nibbled around the edges of Veganuary, but now it's time for Fortune February, and who better to knock us all back into shape than the leader of the pack? The Future Factory came into being in 2011 and forever altered the fabric of the new business industry. Their pioneering approach to embedding staff within advertising, PR, brand and marketing agencies won a lot of recognition. And if they were handing out awards for new business, the Future Factory would have been like James Cameron's Titanic on Oscar night. In the nearly 10 years since they started, not only have they been winning business for clients, but they've also been cheerleading for the whole industry, creating new standards and helping to train and provide focus for hundreds of new business executives. Now, last year, I interviewed one half of the business leadership, Dan Sudron, who gave us a short, sharp shock just when we needed it most. The pandemic had just started to bite. Lockdown was becoming a thing in the UK, but Dan was prepared to eat your lunch if you didn't show up because he realised that this might be a long-term situation and agencies will still need to win business. Now I get to interview the other half of the team, the charismatic Alex Sabeel, who I have actually cold called myself for business. And I can tell you, I don't think I've ever been so nervous because cold calling the Future Factory is like a driving instructor trying to persuade Lewis Hamilton to have a refresher course. So let's prepare to tighten up those new business abs and get motivated with Alex Sabeel of the Future Factory. Welcome, Alex.
What a good intro, Keith. Thank you.
Every time I've emailed you and sort of spoken to you and stuff, you've always been really positive and cheerful. I mean, are you just a naturally positive person?
Yeah, I'm definitely positive. I don't know if I'm always cheerful. I think I used to have a reputation at work for being the scary one. So you're rightly scared to phone me, Keith. No, I'd hope no one's ever scared to phone us. But yeah, I am positive. God, when the lockdown first hit, I was convinced it was only going to be those first 2 weeks when people in the office were saying, shall we take the plants home? I was like, don't be silly, we'll be back soon. And look at us now. So,
but you're remaining positive.
Yeah, I am. Again, when schools closed at the beginning of this year, I was like, oh, it's all right, it'll be 2 weeks and then the kids will be back at school. And I've got a family holiday booked to Italy for Easter, which I booked a long, long time ago and still haven't cancelled. I've got my fingers crossed.
So, I mean, what motivates you in the morning? I mean, do you have a routine to get yourself into shape or just is that just part of your mentality?
Oh, I don't do anything specific to feel positive. Actually, well, I'll tell you what. Before Christmas, I could feel myself getting quite grouchy, actually. Just, I think, being locked in the home with young children and dark weather. Yeah, I was feeling pretty snappy. So for the first time in my entire life, I started exercise. And it really wasn't, I've dabbled before. I've tried to do exercise, but never enjoyed it. But for the first time ever, I was doing it not to try and get a better body, but actually to feel less grouchy. So I do now, not every morning, but every other morning, I do half an hour of exercise before. So I do it in my pyjamas at home in the kitchen, a little exercise workout video. So definitely nothing fancy, but that has helped.
Well, I think there's a lot to be said for it as well. I mean, I have to say, I jumped on the bandwagon. I'm notoriously lazy when it comes to exercise, but the best thing that I heard recently over the last few months has been that it's good just to break sweat once a day. You know, and that really is pretty much it. It's just to get the blood flowing once a day, and that does tend to sort of focus the mind a little bit. But so anyway, I mean, this was what I was going to say to you. You know, Dan actually was a guest on episode 8. I mean, we're now on episode, I mean, we're heading towards our 50th episode now, but he was on episode 8 back in April. Yeah, I know.
It's been really good. Shows how much time we've been in lockdown for.
I know. And I was joking at that time. I said, oh, it's, I think my line was, we're interviewing businessmen trapped in their own home, you know, and it was just a joke. But I mean, obviously the show's grown under this lockdown. But one of the first things that Dan actually kind of opened up with, which I thought was fantastic, and it's held very, very true throughout the whole pandemic, was the value of being helpful and valuable as part of the new business function. And we kind of discussed the value of providing a commentary on how various markets are faring in this kind of roller coaster of an economy, you know, basically being able to speak to clients and stuff and sort of chit chat about their particular industry and how things are working out in their area. What kind of observations have you been able to make about how the kind of new business landscape is looking? I mean, you know, what phase are we now in? Are we in denial, anger, bargaining, depression, whatever?
Oh, for me, it feels like kind of acceptance. You know, we're kind of plodding along, just hope, you know, look at when are we out the other side? You know, we thought it was going to be the summer. Then we thought it was going to be the beginning of this year. You know, we keep thinking, okay, when just, it's coming soon. We will get there, but it's now just, we're so bored of all this. And it does impact business in all sorts of ways. And so it's just now, okay, let's just bide our time, do what we've got to do to get through, heads down. Everyone's just, you know, thinking in our team are working really hard. Sure. It's just working, get through it, and surely we'll all feel so good out the other side. Just got to get there.
I mean, you are noticing, I mean, you are seeing green shoots. I mean, it's not as if everything's stopped. I mean, it's just a question of looking a little bit harder, is it? Is that how you do it?
No, absolutely true. There is, and things are amazing. Again, it surprised me, those first few days of lockdown back in March, whatever it was, you know, like everyone else, I had the fear inside, like, oh my gosh, our world is changing and this is disastrous. And don't get me wrong, it's been, you know, utterly brutal for so many businesses, but things have continued carrying on the whole way through. Business has kept moving. There's been pitches from day one of lockdown all the way throughout, briefs. Yeah, it's hard. And yeah, there's less of it and there's less money. So everything's tighter. But yes, but it's not just green shoots. There's been, business has continued to move. For those who are there to grab it, to fight for it. Yes, it's a harder fight, but it's all still possible. And opportunities. You know, we're passionate about working with independent agencies. We work with agencies of all sizes, but it can be, you get the best payback working with sort of owner-led agencies. And one of the biggest challenges for them is often the biggest contracts are tied up in, you know, 5-year long contracts with the biggest agencies. And as those relationships are shaken up, there's then more opportunities for the smaller agencies to prove they can move faster. You know, with these times, we don't know, you know, you want to make advertising that's very responsive to the situation. If you want to be more cost effective, if you want to find alternative solutions. So actually, of all the wins our clients had over the last year, the biggest share was in CGI and motion graphics, which makes sense. You know, for quite a while, all filming and production was paused. You know, luckily, they got things moving again in that space quite quickly. But yes, it shows there are opportunities. It's, of course, it's harder. But those, and it usually is smaller agencies who can look and think and move. They are surviving. And actually, you know, I've also spoken to lots of agencies who say, you know, a bit guiltily, we had a pretty good year last year. Yeah, and I hear that a lot.
I think it very much resonates with something that Dan said right in that show, was that the agility of the smaller agency, I think, is, you know, is definitely an advantage, you know, being able to do that. I mean, but something else that he picked up, and I think that, I mean, you're obviously familiar with it, that in the world of new business, a lot of clients will say to you, well, we're only interested in contracts that are, you know, 2 million plus, or you know, whatever they happen to be. And Dan was very much arguing against that in terms of, you know, sure, it's good to go for those things, but at the same time, if you have an opportunity to do some sort of groundwork for, you know, for somebody to get your foot in the door, then you should also take those opportunities. I mean, are you still kind of, you know, supporting that kind of point?
Absolutely. Actually, we always have. That's even pre-pandemic. Right. We've always advised that, listen, you know, no one rarely does a brand need new agencies and doesn't know where to go. There are too many agencies, unfortunately, you know, in our marketplace. And so a brand is always spoiled for choice. Right. And so, you know, if they've got an incumbent agency, yeah, a new agency wants to come in and wants to win some work, they have to be willing to prove themselves. Yes, of course, there are the big set pitches. Great, of course, you know, then you're working for the big piece. But you also put a lot of investment into winning that. But the way the majority of our agencies win business is usually smaller projects, of course, with a brand who has the capacity to then become a pillar client. Absolutely, that's really important. But smaller projects prove themselves as an, you know, as an agency that brand hasn't heard of before, you know, and is in possibly smaller than their incumbent. Yeah, they've got to prove themselves. So that's quite normal.
Yeah. No, well, that's, you know, and I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, in that if you do hold back and say, well, we're only going for those bigger things, then you do miss out on, you know, sort of the multiples of smaller bits of work, as long as they're on brand for you and as long as they're what you're within your wheelhouse.
And the aim of those smaller pieces of work is to grow it.
Yes.
You know, I understand agencies who don't want to service hundreds of small clients. That doesn't make sense. But the way to win the bigger clients is to be willing to do smaller projects and not, you know, only look out for the £2 million pitches.
Yes, absolutely. Well, another thing that came to light, I mean, I don't know whether you noticed, but we started doing these small little business briefing, 10-minute sort of business briefing shows.
Yeah.
And one of the ones that we did recently which we're releasing in the next week or so was with Vic Horton, and he, our desktop researcher, who's doing a sterling job. And he actually called it right when he said that basically the grocery brands, the movement in the sort of grocery side of things is going absolutely crazy at the moment because they are on the front line of the retail war and they're having to pull out all the stops. You've got companies like, you know, Asda starting a creative review, Morrison's looking towards a more local focus, but they're obviously feeling the heat from these online players now who are starting to sort of get a larger market share. Do you think that the pandemic has created a sort of a seismic shift in the new business world for agencies?
I think it's made people put new business, agencies for new business at the forefront of their agenda.
Right.
Yeah. And again, I feel that from the conversations I have with agencies, we're speaking to more agencies who are having to have a new business strategy. And yeah, they can't rely on maybe the old means that inbound or just, I suppose, business is a bit more precarious. So, you know, to have a long-term plan in business, even a six-month plan in an agency, you need to know where new business is coming from and having that be a bit more reliable. Maybe when clients are less reliable, their existing clients, they need therefore new business to be a bit more active. And same from our portfolio of clients. We're working with about 50 agencies at the moment.
Wow.
On retainer. You know, all of those feel more engaged than ever, which obviously is great for our team. You know, we really feel those closer partnerships than ever with our agencies because it matters more than ever to our agencies that they're winning business, that they're in the room with the right people, that things are progressing.
That's fantastic. Well, that's amazing. And I think that obviously, you know, the other part to that is that whether the online retailers are the sort of big names in the grocery business are starting to sort of feel their market share being eroded by the convenience factor of, you know, smaller online players who are able to kind of, you know, chip away at their market share with a tighter offering or a more sort of.
I feel like all grocery retailers are doing bloody brilliantly. It's the yeah. only place we can shop. Yeah, I don't feel sorry for them. They're all fine.
Fantastic. Well, okay. So I just want to rewind a bit because back in 2011, you said in a press release, and quoting you directly here, you said that the Future Factory seeks to confront the questionable reputation that new business development has earned in recent years. Now, obviously, the business has evolved considerably and it's evolving really fast. But what do you think were the contributors behind that?
I remember phoning, well, I still do it, but in the early days of the Future Factory, you know, I did all of the phoning agencies to get new clients for us. And over, I would hear how agencies had wasted money on new business agencies. It was a horrible job. I didn't mind doing it, but it could have been a horrible job just hearing negative feedback about this kind of business I had. You know, people had wasted money with new business agencies. They had, didn't get any meetings, or they got meetings with really junior people, or meetings got cancelled. So I heard that a lot, but actually I very quickly learned that great, when someone had that negative feedback, I had all the responses to it. You know, I had good solutions. So then it wasn't such a negative. It was like, great, I'm glad you said that. Here's how we do it differently.
Oh, perfect.
But why was it like that? And I don't get that feedback much anymore. So, you know, I'm sure things have changed in other new biz agencies as well. But sales commission is one of the reasons why, you know, people can be driven to arrange crap meetings, but also lack of care in, you know, lack the people who are doing the outbound lead generation. If they don't care about agencies, if they're not interested in the creative industry, if they've got no accountability to the agency they're representing, you know, if they are, you know, fully, you know, this links then to what we do, but if an agency is fully outsourced, if the person who's doing the calling or whatever it is has no relationship with the agency, well, then, of course, there's no affinity or accountability. And, you know, we all know through social media how if you're faceless, it makes people behave in ways they wouldn't if they were face to face with someone.
Yes. So
I think that's a big part of it. And also, and again, I don't know how our competitors operate now, but at that time, I'd hear also that lead generation agencies were tying their agency partners into contracts for over 6 months.
Sure.
And then the new business agency was delivering very little in that time, but they had, you know, 6 months of revenue, and then they were churning clients. In the early years of the Future, I think we're about 6 months old, and I called an agency, and actually they had a new business development director, and he had been, actually I won't name them, but he'd been at one of our major competitors of a new business agency. He'd been on their board there for many years, and then he'd left and now was a business development director at a very big agency. And he said, oh, this is a really interesting Future Factory. But actually, I'm going to tell you that your business model is not going to work. Part of our business model is that our account managers each look after two agencies each, whereas at most of our competitors, their account managers will look after minimum five agencies each. You know, but we keep it a lower number so we can do the job very thoroughly and do it well and conscientiously. And but he was like, I get it, all makes sense. It sounds lovely, but it's just a business model is not going to work. And I was like, well, I feel like if we keep our clients, you know, as long as we're not churning and burning clients, having less clients, but we keep them long term because we're doing a good job, I think it'll work. And he was like, yeah, well, we'll see if you last a year. Here we are, nearly 10 years.
And the biggest dog on the block as well. I mean, that's the great thing about it. But I mean, it was interesting something you just said there about, you know, we don't know how our competitors work. I mean, I don't mean this in a blasé way or in a kind of a nonchalant way, but really, you don't care how anybody else works, do you?
Oh, yeah, that sounds dismissive. Well, I am sometimes curious, but no, you're right. No, it's not entirely true. I do now and again, if I'm speaking to an agency and we have pitched directly against a competitor, I do now and again ask them. It probably happens once or twice a year that I'll say, actually, how do we compare price-wise? And now and again, we might interview, oh no, we'll meet someone in an agency who used to work in one of our competitors, and it's more like we'll tell them about us and they'll go, that is so different to how it worked at where I used to work. And then that is interesting. And then we do take those stories back to our team and go, you don't know how lucky you are.
But you've got what I'm trying to drive at here is the fact that, you know, you've got a very single focus on your business model because it works, and however anybody else tends to run their own agency really is, you know, it's inconsequential to what you do, because, you know, you're doing what works for you as an agency. And it seems to be, you know, you're not distracted by the way other agencies work. You're very kind of focused on what you do.
I suppose so, because it is working. It's true. Yeah, it's working really well. We get such amazing feedback. Our clients are winning business. So yeah, I don't need to look. And, you know, and we get the feedback that our clients have worked with other new business agencies, and then they work with us, and then they, you know, then they give us amazing feedback. So I know that's not where I would look for inspiration of how to change our business. But that's not to say that I don't look at other sorts of businesses and think, wow, we need more of that in our world. So a couple of examples. There's a brilliant copywriter called Treacle Copywriting, or Treacle Copywriting, I think it's called. And they do copywriting for agencies. I love what they do. And I sometimes think, wow, how can we incorporate that in our business? Or Agency Hackers, who have an amazing community of agency owners, really wonderful community, really supportive. And again, things like that, those inspire me. I think, wow, they've built something really wonderful. I wish we had that in our world as well, because I see the value it brings to agencies. So I do definitely look to other people for inspiration, and sometimes jealous or impressed by what other people are doing. But I suppose you're right, it's not necessarily in our direct competitor set.
No, it's good to be impressed by other people. I think that's always, you know, it's always nice, because it means that you're kind of aware of what else is going on in the business. But as long as it doesn't affect your business model, I think is the key to it there. Because, I mean, getting back to your business model, you pioneered the idea of embedding people in a client agency. I mean, how did you? What was the thought process behind that?
It was about trying to, well, I suppose the feedback from agencies, you know, when we started this, was that outsourcing lead generation wasn't, you know, just wasn't working. They had no idea who was representing their business, what people were saying, but then it wasn't delivering great results. So outsourcing wasn't fantastic. And people tried hiring in-house for the new business manager role. And that also had its downfalls, because typically agencies, or again, smaller size agencies of less than 50 people, didn't have a new business team. So there was no one to manage, support, direct a new business manager. And so that wasn't an optimum solution either. So we tried to develop the bridge between the two. There is benefits to outsourcing. There is benefits to having a team whose expertise is in lead generation for agencies. So that's the outsource part. But there is, of course, huge benefits to being based in an agency and absorbing that and feeling part of that agency. So yeah, it was about making that hybrid model.
So that's really, I think, at the heart of what you do is that, I mean, from my perspective, it seems more logical that a new business person would be part of the culture. I mean, I've worked in house and outhouse as well, or outhouse like a toilet. But I've worked in house and sort of as a new business agency as well. And I think it's always been important when you're representing an agency to know and understand the culture of the company that you're with, so that you're able to reflect the values of that agency in whatever, you know, because if the agency has a very kind of informal, chatty approach, then it's good to be informal or chatty. There's no point in wearing a suit and stuff. But
well, that's largely what sets agencies apart is their culture and people. And yeah, agencies have processes, but in reality, so often, you know, work comes about from a group of creatively minded people tackling a brand challenge.
Right.
And so, yeah, so that's what the, you know, a client buys into, that bunch of people and the good solutions they've come up with in the past. They rarely buy into a process. So, yeah, you have to know the people and try and, yeah, represent that when you're talking about an agency.
And I think that's it's a great thing to be able to. For an agency to know that the people they're entrusting their new business with understand their culture and where they come from, and so they're able to identify the right kind of, you know, sort of projects and things like that when they're talking to people. So yeah.
Well, that's right. And then there's also just the peace of mind for the agency that, you know, typically we are sat very close to, on the same desk as, you know, the agency owner, the MD,
right,
the business development director, so they can hear how we're representing them. And don't get me wrong, that is daunting for our team, you know. that is a tough gig we give them, but yeah, for the agency owner, that peace of mind, they think, yeah, this person sounds good. And if I had the time, because that's a large part of lead generation, is putting the time, it's time consuming, it's not easy, and if I had the time to do it, that's how I would do it, and this person sounds great and lovely and is making a great first impression of my agency.
Wow,
that's the aim.
Coming on to that, is that one of the things that you said recently in a sort of promotional video was the fact that the Future Factory people are kind of different from those in competitor agencies, and I guess it's down to the mentality of the person or the personality there. I mean, is there something special in the people that you've got, and what do you think that is?
I mean, they are all amazing. A good thing is they're not all carbon copies. Our team are, you know, they're different and amazing in so many different ways, and have different interests and slightly different backgrounds. And I don't do our hiring, actually. You know, we've got a team doing that internally who are doing it so fantastically that, you know, I keep well away. But like, you know, I'd have to ask them, but I think they prioritize likability, emotional intelligence, you know, being super clever over being ball busting sales. Actually, there was about a year ago, I got involved in an interview. I don't know why I was pulled in, but we were interviewing a guy, and, you know, the person who was doing the interview asked if I could sit in with her. I was like, yeah, fine, happy to. And the guy, it was a hard-ish one to decide. I mean, he was a clear no, but at the same time, I was like, whoa. he was clearly super motivated to succeed, you know, and I could tell he would work incredibly hard. He would make 1,000 phone calls a day if you asked him to, but he had zero interest in creative agencies. You know, his love was for sales, for changing someone's no into a yes, for hitting targets, you know, which is all good. But
it's one.
I was just, you know, thinking, right, okay, this guy would work really hard, and I'm trying to think, okay, if I was an agency owner now, would I want this guy on my team? It's like, well, yeah, if I want him to open doors, yes, I would. But is he going to make the best impression of my agency? Is he actually going to is he interested in learning more about my agency and like kind of impressing prospects by talking about how great my agency is? Or is he just going to use sales tactics to twist people's arms? And he was more that side. So I was like, yes, it's. I could tell straight away he wasn't a right fit for us, but I was trying to work out why. Why are we turning away someone who clearly is going to be very hardworking and probably very good at sales? And that's kind of what it came to. I suppose it was that lack of any care for actually the craft that we're representing.
Oh, craft. That's a good word. That's a great word. That's fantastic. Well, I mean, personality and people is one part of it, but I mean, another part of the new business job is the way that the agencies that they work for present themselves and what materials they use and things like that. And, you know, part of the job obviously involves attracting the attention of buyers and CMOs, et cetera. And we've been discussing recently on the show the contribution that content marketing can make to an agency's effort. So, for example, we had an interview with Ian Humphreys of agency No Camo, and he was very focused on the role that content generated by his creative team falls into a wider business drive. And mm-hmm. You and I had a conversation not too long ago where that chimed with that, because you basically said that that often agency marketing, new business sit apart and as two separate strategies, action plans, etc. So whereas, you know, to get most out of marketing, it should be working off the new business plan, and the new business team should be using the marketing to convert the leads.
Absolutely.
Now,
yeah,
it may sound quite basic, but how would you advise an agency goes about creating a new business plan?
It's funny, you emailed over that question, and I thought, God, I need to put together a little post about this, because there's kind of a bunch of questions we get out. And we do, when we start with a new agency, we we ask them a lot of questions so that we can put together that new business plan. But one of the things is, why are you looking to win new business? And that sounds really basic, but that could be, you know, for a lot of people, it's just increase our income. Or it's actually, you know, often it's we need another pillar client. We've got one or two pillar clients. We feel vulnerable. Something's changed in those clients' world. We need another pillar client. It could be that we've had this quite a few times, like actually we're fine financially, but we need some sexier clients to keep our team engaged. You know, that we do get that quite a bit. It could be that they want to grow a specific division of the agency. We work with an agency who do, obviously not relevant for this year, but in previous years, they do lots of PR for festivals. So they're extremely busy for 6 months of the year. Then the other 6 months of the year, historically, they didn't have as much work. So they've been working for many years at building up their client base in other areas. So that's the first question is, you know, making a new business plan is why? Why do you want new business? What's the purpose of it? Mm. And then there's all sorts of other things that we can look at. Okay, what kind, and then targeting comes into it. You know, what kinds of brands? Analyzing their existing clients or past clients, where's there been good profit margins? Again, sometimes madly, we have agencies come to us and say, hey, we do loads of different kinds of work. Can you get us more? Look, this is nice and shiny. Can we have more of that? And then we're like, well, but you outsource loads of that. So how's the profit margin? Actually, yes, terrible profit margin. Okay, so let's look at where's your higher profit margin work? Shouldn't we be trying to win you that kind of work?
Right.
Yeah. But, so
the, I mean, what you're saying is that really that it begins with the why, you know, is that once you identify the why behind sort of the new business, the quest for new business, then, you know, that will then give you the kind of the path down which you need to travel and will help you, you know, in a conversation with an expert like yourself, because they're able to, you know, you're able to say, well, you know, I've heard it so many times with agencies that when they say, you know, well, 90% of our work is referral, you know, and obviously the danger with referral work is that you do get trapped in a channel of doing the same stuff, and you know, people saying, well, you know, I've heard you're very good at, say, social media, for example, so all you ever do is social media, and so you get trapped. And what you were just saying there about using new business to kind of inspire your staff is when you get a new project that comes in that challenges their ways of thinking and makes them sort of think outside the box and come up with new products and things like that. I think it's, you know, new business can play a real part in inspiring an entire workforce in a business, can't it?
Absolutely. Or changing the direction of an agency. Again, years ago, an agency came to me and said, right, we do social media for loads of brands, but brands are taking the kind of work we do, they're taking more and more in-house. So, you know, we can see that coming. We need to start delivering a different kind of work. So we want to start trying to win these kinds of projects so that in a year or two, when there just really is no more social media being outsourced, we're ready and we've got some, you know, projects under our belt. So the first thing, understanding why, and then identifying, okay, where do we think is ripe hunting ground for them?
Right. I think part of, you know, or obviously part of that afterwards is saying, okay, well, what is it that we're going to present, and what are we, you know, how are we going to present it? And I think when I've worked in agencies as well, oftentimes you get kind of called in and somebody gives you a brochure and says, okay, this is what we're going to be, you know, this is going to be our presentation. And so you're called in pretty much after the collateral has been created. But referencing obviously what you said, just, you know, the quote that I pulled out from you is that should the sales be part of that consultation when they're actually thinking about what to sell, you know, the presentation deck, if you want it, the sales should actually be helping to develop that.
Well, 100%. I mean, because the marketing should be targeted at who you're going to be speaking to. So for example, you have to do the new business targeting, working out who you're going to target, and that can be sectors or job titles or what discipline you're selling. You have to identify that before you create your marketing. It's all fine and well to make a beautiful presentation which is targeting the automotive sector, but you've decided actually that this year you want to grow your fashion clients. So it's like, well, that's completely useless. So actually, if you decide you want to target fashion clients, okay, then are we talking luxury, street, high end? What, where in fashion? Break that down. What job titles? What are their challenges? What are the issues going on in the world, in their world right now? then you create the marketing once you've understood, because then it's interesting. Other, if it's just, you know, top 10 trends in PR and fashion in 2021, I swear anyone who works, you know, in PR and fashion can Google that and find better answers. Marketing is only useful if it's specific and relevant and answers a question or a challenge or, you know, or adds value. And so to do that has to be specific. So you have to start with the, you know, this is marketing 101. It's like, who are you marketing to and what, you know, what do you want to say?
Well, I mean, oftentimes, you know, this is the you know, it does sound basic, but oftentimes, you know, you get the marketing is very much from the top down, you know, is saying, okay, well, this is where we want to go because, you know, the chairman, CEO, or whatever has decided to target a sort of a high value sector where the agency doesn't necessarily have the right credentials or doesn't have a track record in that. And
but that's okay. So if that someone, be the CEO or someone else in the agency, has decided we want to target this high value sector and therefore we've created marketing in that space, that's fine, because that is still linked to, we want to win business in this space. And also, and often we would start actually doing the outreach without the marketing. It's like, well, let's first ask questions. Let's understand what their challenges are. Right. That can then feed your marketing. But, and, you know, and we'll play on your past case studies and your experience and why you're well placed to have this conversation. If an agency wants to target a certain sector and they don't have the experience, then it probably is valuable to do some research and create something so they have a reason to be stepping a foot in that door.
Yes.
But we usually can do our job without too much marketing. Usually we say, create your marketing for the conversion stage. We'll attract, we'll open doors with your sectors. You know, we'll tell you if you're mad to even go knocking on those doors. We mutually agree with an agency. This is where we think they're we'll be able to open doors. Once we've opened those doors, you'll be going in and having conversations, asking questions, understanding where the opportunities or challenges are for those brands. Then create marketing that then keeps you front of mind, that shows you've understood their challenges, that shows you're well placed to help them overcome them. And that's part of the conversion.
Fantastic.
So that's where I see marketing coming into play.
Well, and obviously, you know, huge amounts of experience coming out in there as well. So I'm sure everybody listening to that will appreciate that. But I mean, it, personally, in your own career, I mean, what's been your kind of biggest personal achievement, do you think, or business achievement? I mean, what have been the sort of milestones that you like to look back on?
Business-wise, I mean, we're going to be 10 years this summer. So
congratulations.
The fact that we're still here is an achievement. I won't take that lightly. You know, in the early years, you read all those stats that, you know, what is it, 90% of businesses or something fail in their first 2 years. I don't know what the stat is. But, you know, that rings in your head when you're in a new business and you put some of your own money in to get it going. Actually, I remember in those early years of business, having the thought that running a business is like having a hot air balloon and you've got to keep puffing air in. And the second you stop putting energy under it, and the second you stop pumping your energy and hot air into it, it'll just fall down and crash. It was like you can never take your foot off the gas for a second or shit would go wrong. And that's still true. That is still true about business. I believe that you have to be putting your all into it to keep it going. But I suppose, thankfully, you know, today, there are others helping put their puff into a hot air balloon. Yeah. We've got a brilliant senior team who've been with us for more than 5 years. So, you know, we've got a lot of other people putting that energy in. So actually, if I need to switch off for a week or two, things don't all come crashing down, which is how it feels like in the early days. So we're still here. We're going strong and I still enjoy it. The business is still evolving. We're still learning, which is incredible.
You've got another balloon, haven't you, up in Manchester as well now?
Yes, which has gone better than expected. They are all so wonderful. God, we spent less time there than, because that's now, no, it's, yeah, it's not even a year and a half yet, year and a half in April. We spent way less time there than planned, but it has, you know, without me or Dan, but it's got an MD there, it's grown brilliantly. They're 9 people now and doing so, so well. And it's lovely to see, because it also reminds us a lot of the early years of Future Factory London, because, you know, we are now all one team, particularly with us doing all business via video calls. We are definitely one united team. But they're so close and so engaged and so excited, and it's brilliant.
That's fantastic. And that's John, right? John Schumacher up there. Yes. He's a friendly chap. I've spoken to him on a couple of occasions, but it's very nice. But so why Manchester? What was it about Manchester?
Well, a couple of things. The main one was John, who'd been with us for 5 years, was moving to Manchester with his family. So, you know, it was one of those things where the opportunity came up. So that was really what pushed it. But there is a great community of agencies there.
Right.
So also, you know, we definitely looked at it before. We delivered training sessions to Manchester agencies. So we've done little initiatives there. But also because of the way we work in clients' offices on a, you know, weekly, monthly basis, we'd always, as a business, we'd always been very restricted to working with just London agencies. We worked with a few Brighton agencies. We worked with, you know, a couple of New York agencies, Swedish agencies, but 99% of our client base was London, so that we could spend that time in their offices. So we often got lots of inbound leads from Northern agencies over the years, and we would generally turn them down. We would say, well, we can offer you training, but, you know, the way our model works best is where we can be really close to you. And so then, yeah, John moving opened up that opportunity. And now, as it happens, we've done, you know, this whole year of not working in clients' offices, and, you know, things are still going great.
Well, it's still, I mean, I think, you know, very much it's this is just another way of working in clients' offices, really, isn't it? I mean, you're still able to with.
But we're seeing inside their homes instead.
You get to meet their kids and the dogs and everything as well. But I mean, a fantastic set of answers there, Alex. Thank you very much. I mean, the question that I've always wanted to ask is there anything that you've always wanted to be asked in an interview but never have been? Something that you think, oh, I wish somebody would ask me about that.
No, but also, you know what? This is, I think, my third interview ever.
No.
Yeah.
Well, you're very good. I'm sure when people
listen to this. I usually shy away from these things.
Yeah, when people listen to this, you'll get loads of calls now, I'm sure.
Well, I hope so. That'd be great. That's why I'm doing it. But actually, also, my mum has said before that it's good to do things that put you out of your comfort zone. But a few years ago, she was asked by a neighbour if she would do life modelling for their art class. And my mum is definitely no extrovert. She did do life modelling for her neighbour's art class. Got even more daunting doing it for your neighbour.
Oh my God.
Just because she said it's good to do things that make you uncomfortable now and again.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the same with me in this.
That's fantastic. Well, I actually have a quote over my desk, actually, which is from by a great talent that I always rate, David Bowie, who said that if you feel safe in an area you're working in, then you're not always go a little bit further into the water than you feel you're capable of being in, because going out of your depth when you don't feel your feet are quite touching the bottom, that's just about the right place when you're going to do something exciting.
Very good. Yeah, I like it. It's the same thing.
It is. It's fantastic. It's the idea of just pushing yourself that extra little mile. But you'd be a great interview. So you'll be fantastic. I expect to see you on loads of podcasts and stuff from now on.
Thanks.
Here's a question for you. Who would you like to be stuck with in an elevator, and who would you like to, and what would you talk about?
Well, it's a good question, but I couldn't think of anything. In the end, I just thought, you know what? Someone involved in Bitcoin, and just to help me understand it.
I know. Isn't that just so? Just
you know, I've never taken the time to even read up to try and understand. Like, oh, you know what? That'd be handy. If I've got half an hour stuck somewhere, go on then. An expert can explain to me how it works and should I invest in it?
So Elon Musk then?
Yeah, that'd be handy. No, I think he'd be a bit too eccentric. Someone a bit more down to earth.
Fantastic. But I know that you also recently sort of around Christmas time you put out a recommended reading section and stuff, and we're building up a library of books for people to put on the shelves for their video calls and stuff. Now, it doesn't have to be business, but have you got an interesting or meaningful book recommendation?
Well, actually, I happen to love business books, and the one I've got is sitting right next to me now because I'm halfway through reading it. I don't think I put on that list that I put together because it's not totally specifically about agencies. But have you heard of Traction?
No.
Not. Oh, you must read it. The book I'm reading now, my recommendation, is called Get a Grip. And it's the second book in the series, a series of business books. This is just sounding so exciting. but basically, it's a book, it's a business book teaching you an operating system, as they call it, to help entrepreneurial businesses run and grow successfully. Loads of agencies try to implement it. As with any kind of really good advice, it's quite hard to implement. Basically, the authors have read all of the famous business books, and they've taken the best bits of advice and then tried to put them into a step-by-step process to cover all parts of business. So from how to run more effective meetings, how to set goals and actually achieve those goals, and how to make sure your people are motivated and doing in the right roles. So it's, when you read it, it feels like, of course, this is the answer. If I can implement this, this is the answer to any business issues.
Fantastic.
So there's the book Traction that tells you how it basically gives all the advice. Yep. Get a Grip is a fictional story of a business trying to implement Traction, and it kind of helps it really sink in how to do it right or how you could do it wrong.
Perfect. Well, that sounds great. Okay, well, yes, we'll definitely have that. So it's Traction is the follow-up to...
Traction is the first one.
Okay.
And Get a Grip is the second one.
Get a Grip. Perfect. Well, thank you very much for that. That's great. We'll definitely put that on our...
It's dry, but I do genuinely recommend it.
Well, now the question I didn't get to ask Dan, because we hadn't thought of it yet, and it was very early days in the show. Bit of fun now. Your Isolation Island disc. So one piece of music that you utterly love.
You know what? Just nice and simple. Adele, Rolling in the Deep. I love just belting out a ballad.
Do you sing along to it then?
Can't help myself.
Fantastic.
Not in front of other people though.
That's your shower one, is it?
That's for driving on the motorway on my own.
Lovely. Yeah, excellent, excellent. And finally, with the new one that we've introduced for 2021 is what three words? So three words that identify you as a person. They could be anything. They don't have to be adjectives and descriptors and stuff like that. Anything. Any three words that you think identify you.
You know, I find this sort of thing so hard. You know, people say, like, what animal would you be? I still never got an answer to that. I think just I'll give you three things that I like. I love the seaside. I love food and I love friends. So I'm not sure that identifies me, but it's three things I love.
That's fantastic. Those are great three words. That's fantastic. Well, Alex, what can I say? That was fantastic. You did a lovely job and a very informative. So thank you very much for talking to me. And I really do appreciate everything that you do. And I love the way that you champion the new business world. And I think it's kind of, it's such a, you bear it with such grace as an agency as well, because you never sort of like toot your own horn too much, but you're always there and you're always kind of, you know, sort of in the groove and sort of waving the flag for the new business industry. So I think you'll do a fantastic job, and a big shout out to all the team at the Future Factory as well, because I know they're all a great bunch of
people. Thank you, Keith, for always being a great partner to our business. Everyone in the business knows your name and enjoys getting emails from you and asking if we need things. So yeah, thank you.
Well, it's just nice to, it's nice that the industry, I think, is starting to get its feet under itself, and you know, I think I think uniquely it will be it'll be a sort of a good next couple of years for the industry as well. So and I look forward to you guys leading the charge for it. So thank you very much.
Thank you so much.
All right, well, we'll catch up with you soon, Alex. Thanks a lot for coming on again, and say hi to everybody, and we'll speak to you again soon.
We'll do speak soon.
Bye. Okay, so if you haven't got the message yet, there's no hope for you. Fortune favours the brave, and the entire team at the Future Factory is walking the walk and talking the talk. There's plenty of new business opportunities out there, probably even more than normal. It's just a question of finding the right process to unlock them. My warm thanks to Alex and everyone at TFF, a massive cast list of talent. You can catch Alex and the team on all the usual social channels, and keep an eye out for their training sessions too. There's a really good way to get the basics right. In the meantime, I'd like to thank Team Fuel as we round the corner and head towards our 50th show. Co-producer Donna, new business trailblazer Jeremy Davies,
the band, the Prospectors, that's St. Matthew, Peter Banks, Bob and Barney. Finally, thanks to the tech team at Queegee Bow Design in downtown Indianapolis. And I'll catch you next time on The Fuel Podcast, the new business show sponsored by The Advertist, the new business development platform for the new business curious. And really, shouldn't that include you?